You better come on in my kitchen. There's far to be raining her door.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? A little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a bigger pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. Now let me start that over. Good evening and welcome to Mouthful. It is indeed the Wine Country's most delicious hour. Hope you're enjoying your day. A little hot, huh? I was at Andy's, little market up in Sebastopol on 116, not quite to Occidental Road. I was there the first hot day we had earlier this week, and there's this sweet little checker with red hair and lots of freckles, and there's this woman talking to her, and this woman was going on and on about how much she loved this hot weather, and I had gotten in line after they'd already had the conversation, and the poor redhead's eyes were wide, and she said, "Oh, I really have a hard time with this weather." And this woman was gloating, and then she says, "Well, you know, you got to have your time. Now it's ours, so quit your whining." And here I come, and I'm there, honey. It's the redhead thing. We carry our own furnace, and we have a really hard time in hot weather. This woman had no sympathy, and she was gloating. And, you know, when it's cool and the fog rolls in and I'm happy, I do try not to gloat if I'm around people who prefer hot weather. But man, today when I looked at my weather widget, and I always believe it when it gives me bad news, it said it was 93 degrees in Sebastopol, but that it felt like 99. And it's like, yeah, right on. It feels like at least 99. So it's summer. You know, everybody who's complaining about the cool weather can stop complaining now. And it's going to be like this all week long. So here's something that can help you, and I'm going to try to take advantage of it this week. I was in Petaluma a couple times this week, running errands and visiting some friends and doing some research. And there's this little place that sells, I think they sell like hot dogs, and they're on Kentucky Street right near Copperfield's Books. And it's one of those little tiny places. I think you don't walk inside to order, you order on the street. They were closed when I was there. But I was, you know, sort of pressed my nose against the window because they have a sign that says shave ice. And among the flavors of shave ice is root beer. And for me, that is one of the best things in the world when it's really hot is root beer shave ice. And for some reason, the few shave ice places I've seen around here, you know, it's a classic Hawaiian thing. But there have been a few places that have been doing it. No one has root beer. So anyway, there's at least one place in Petaluma that has root beer shave ice. And then I was driving back, and we'd been gone quite a while. And as I'm driving north on Petaluma Boulevard North, all of a sudden I passed this big sign that said Aloha. And I saw it right when it was too late for me to really read everything else. But I did notice shave ice. So it looks like there are two places in Petaluma with shave ice and at least one with root beer. So if you're really, really hot, maybe a trip to Petaluma is in order. Hi, it's Michelle Jordan, and it's just me tonight, and you, if you decide that you might want to call. I do this every now and then, but it's been about, gosh, it's probably been 4 or 5 years since I did the show alone, and for several reasons, I decided to do that tonight. So write down this number if you would, if at any time you're moved to call in. The number to call is 588-0637. That's 588-0637. And the way that it works is when you call, you're automatically put on hold. We don't have screeners or anything. So you're automatically put on hold and just hang tight listening to the show until you hear me say, hey, thanks for calling. And it's sort of an everything goes night, but with a few topics that I'll be covering in this hour. One, and the first thing I'm going to talk about is Father's Day. If you have a memory of your father and food, whether or not your father is still with you, with us or not. I had some people, actually two previous producers of Mouthful, left comments on Facebook today about food, some of their favorite food memories of their dad. I thought, well, that's just really a sweet thing to remember. So that's one thing you can call about. Another thing, you got a question for me about farmers markets, about cooking, about anything at all. Now's your time to ask me the question live on the air. So anything at all that you've been wanting to ask me, you can ask by calling that number. And then at some point in the hour, I'm also going to talk about feeding our pets. I've started out with my dog because dogs are way, for the most part, way less picky than cats. I'm going to try to tackle my cat's diet sometime soon as well. But I've switched my little dog, Joey, the little dachshund I rescued a year and a half ago, who you sometimes hear barking in the background on Mouthful. I've switched him to an all-raw diet after doing a bunch of reading. And it seems like it's working really well. So I was going to talk to you about that. And if you have anything that you would like to add or any questions, that's something else that we'll be addressing. But really, anything you want to ask, if you don't feel like calling. And traditionally, people have not really wanted to call Mouthful, as they just like to listen. That's fine, too. You can go to Mouthful's Facebook page, and you can post a question on Mouthful's Facebook page. Eric is monitoring that page, and I'm taking a look at it, too. So let's just talk about your dad, your dads, for a minute. You know, it's a topic I always feel like out of my depth when it comes to talking about fathers, because my father died when I was an infant, and I never had a stepfather, and I didn't have brothers. I didn't have men in my life, really. I had a step-grandfather and a great uncle, I guess, but nobody who really has that intimate day-to-day contact and shaping of life like a father. So, and I, one thing I don't know about my father is anything that he liked to eat. And I've always wished that I would know something about that, but in fact, I don't. I do know that he liked Hank Williams, and I also know that he really wanted a child. He really wanted a girl. He wanted to name her Michelle, and he wanted her. He wanted to dress her up. He wanted her to be the best dressed kid on the block, is how I was told about it. And I don't know if that's what accounts for my lifelong passion for clothes, but it's certainly what I used to get my mother to buy me clothes that I wanted. Anyway, I don't know what my dad liked to eat. I wish I did. And I want to tell you what a couple of people did have to say. Frederick, who produced Mouthful for quite a long time, said she has several favorite food memories of her father, and she suspects that she is not alone. One of them was having vanilla ice cream with him for breakfast when she was a teenager. And also the last fresh fish dinner that they shared, which was about a week before he died. And then a secret recipe for tortoni that he liked to make around the holidays. Another favorite memory she had was in an Indonesian restaurant in Singapore. She was about 10 years old, and it was completely authentic. She remembers that the food was served on banana leaves. There were no utensils. It was an open-air hut covered in palm fronds, and it was just her dad and Frederick and Indonesians. And she just really savors those memories of her father. And I may see if I can get Mouthful's engineer to think about this topic. And his eyebrows just went up. But maybe he has a memory or two. Or, you know, the lack of a memory that has a poignant story to it as well. So I'll tell you one more, and maybe by then Eric will have something to share with us. And I should also tell you that if you want to join us, you can do that either by posting something at Mouthful's Facebook page, and I will read it as I'm reading things now, or you can give us a call, 588-0637. So Nancy Lawrence produced Mouthful, produced and engineered Mouthful for quite a long time. I loved those days. It was really great working with Nancy. And I met her father, met him on two or three different occasions in the year before he died. And he was really a great guy. She was lucky to have such a wonderful dad. He loved the world's largest salmon barbecue, which takes place up in Fort Bragg every July. And the barbecue includes fresh grilled wild salmon, corn on the cob, wine, salad, and garlic, grilled garlic bread that was dripping with butter. Everything was eaten outside together at long lines of picnic tables. And sometimes you had to stand in line for almost an hour. But Nancy's father loved that part of things. And in those few years when there wasn't much of a line, when the lines were really short, he would complain that he missed out on a lot of the fun. So that is Nancy Lawrence's memory of her dad. And Eric is standing up. I think that's good news.
So, my dad does not cook at all, period.
Ever.
Ever. Under any circumstances. He barely ventures into the kitchen. I mean, it might as well be walled off. So my parents split up when I was really young. So we would go with my dad. And when we were with my dad on my dad's night, my dad was responsible for making us dinner, which was a problem for him because he doesn't go into the kitchen. So that's kind of difficult to do that unless you plan on making dinner in the living room, which would be interesting. The only thing I remember him doing, other than taking us out to eat, was putting, he could basically take food out of a frozen package, turn on the oven, put the frozen food into the oven, take it out, and give it to us. So I ate a lot of these frozen, circular, nasty chicken patties. I remember that. And French fries that were defrosted and heated in the oven. Basically the type of food that you wouldn't catch me dead eating today.
Yeah.
So that's what I ate a lot of with my dad.
Well, it sounds like he wasn't quite as bad as some in that he wasn't using the oven like to store books or anything. And I have heard about people that do that.
I've heard that also. No, he did use the oven when we were with him. When he didn't take us out to eat, he tried, I guess. What I have not understood is why he couldn't ask one of his female friends, and he had female friends, I'm stereotyping, he could have asked his male friends too, how to do basic things in the kitchen. I mean, it's not nuclear physics, right? Yeah. Someone, you know, some people don't know, but you can show them and then
they
know.
You can show them, or you can get a book.
Yes, but he didn't do that. It's just, it's a block that some people have,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, there, people do have that. Do you remember anything that he took, that he takes particular pleasure in eating?
My dad is like me in that he likes pretty much everything. He just likes to eat, period.
Really? He likes to eat, but he just couldn't bring himself to feed himself.
Right. And now that he has a partner again, and he has no reason to go into the kitchen again. I mean, literally, when I go over his house and I ask him, where are the X, anything that you use a lot.
Where's a glass for some water?
Where's the salt? Where's a glass for water? He doesn't know. Ask his partner. That's what he says to me. He says, ask her. And it's just like, but dad, come on now. I mean, where are the forks? Come on. He doesn't go into the kitchen. So it's an issue. I don't understand it. It's the exact opposite of me because I'm hardly a gourmet chef, but I prepare almost all my own meals. Mm-hmm. I'm constantly in the kitchen. I mean, all the time.
What about your grandparents? Do you know? Your paternal grandparents, do you know what that home eating and cooking situation was like?
My grandmother, my dad's, my grandma died before I was born, his mother, and his father, when we'd go down there, we'd go out to eat. But he was already 60 years old by the time, maybe he, when he was younger, he cooked. By the time I met him when I was born, he was 60 years old.
60 is nothing.
Right.
But I mean, I say that in part because I always think of this man whom I actually never met, but I learned some really important recipes from him. He was the father of a friend of mine, of an Italian friend of mine, a Sicilian friend of mine. And this man, I think his name was Antonio. He came from Sicily to the East Coast and had my friend who's named AJ, which is an interesting story in itself. AJ's mother called him Joey, and AJ's father called him Anthony. his friends call him AJ. And as it turns out, when his mother was still in the hospital after having him and after having named him Joseph, his father went to the courthouse and changed his name. And like they always fought over it. And his mother was this devoted Sicilian mother, and she came here for a wedding or to visit. And I tried to talk to them, and it's like, oh, what did you think of seeing the Golden Gate Bridge? You know, I was really trying to find a way to talk to him. The only thing she could say, it's so nice to see my Joey. My Joey is doing so well. And her husband would just look at her like, who's Joey? Anyway, back to the recipes from this man. At 97 years old, he was still cooking for himself every day.
Wow.
And his dinner typically was steak, a grilled steak, and a salad. And this is where what I learned from him really came in, a Sicilian orange salad. We had a peeled orange, got all the rind off, and then sliced crosswise very thinly, put on a plate, and then he would drizzle a little bit of water on it, and then olive oil, salt, and black pepper.
Sounds good.
It is really, I've done all sorts of variations. Sometimes I'll put real thinly sliced red onion in between the orange slices. Sometimes I'll take a vegetable peeler and put curls of pecorino on top of it. And I actually served that salad to Francis Coppola many years ago at Mike Thompson's house. So 60 is no excuse for, you know, like you don't get off the hook.
Right.
You're 60,
no, you're right.
You
yeah.
still better be cooking.
Right. No, that's true. Good point.
But that makes a lot of sense. Your father's mother died young. The father took them out to eat, so maybe he didn't grow up watching someone at the stove, which is where a lot of people learn to cook.
But I grew up with my mom, next to my mom in the kitchen. When I was with my mom, and I was chopping vegetables when I was 5 years old, and she'll still
good for you.
Talk about it. You know, I grew up in the kitchen, just not with my dad.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's happened to a lot of kids. And I think on that note, we should hear, there's a tradition here on Mouthful that I've honored more years than not. And some years I haven't been able to find the song, but we have it today. And it's a song that probably just for the sound of the voice has always made me think of my father.
My father always promised us that we would live in France. We'd go boating on the Seine. And I would learn to dance. We lived in Ohio then. He worked in the mines. On his dreams like boats we knew we'd sail. Soon we're gone to Denver and Cheyenne, marrying their grown-up dreams, the lilacs and the man.
Across the
You are listening to Mouthful. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. I am my own guest tonight. I do this every now and then and enjoy it when I do, and really happy that Eric has been willing to chime in. And, you know, Eric, you can ask any questions that you want too, so think while you're engineering, and if you have something you want me to answer before the end of the show, I will do that.
Okay. I'm going through the hard drive that's located in the back of my brain and searching for files that are relevant to this show.
Okay, good. I hope you find some. Let's see. What are we going to do next? I think we should talk about farmers markets next. We are all the way fully into the farmers market season now. And just think for a minute. How many farmers markets do you think there are just in Sonoma County? 10? 8? 12? Without looking at my cheat sheet, Eric, how many do you think there are?
I would say there's about 7 that I regularly hear about.
Uh-huh. There's, and even I don't know the complete answer. There's somewhere between 16 and 18. Oh, wait, no, 16. There's somewhere between 17 and 19, if I've counted correctly, when the seasonal markets, because, you know, there's the year-round markets, and there aren't that many. The year-end markets in Sonoma County are Sonoma Valley on Fridays, the original Santa Rosa Market on both Wednesday and Saturday. So if you count those as two, so that's 3. The Oakmont Market on Saturdays, so that's 4. And I think those are the only year-round markets. And then the seasonal markets start to kick in. The first one is the first Sunday in April with the Sebastopol Farmers Market, and then over the next, about the next 8 weeks, all of the different seasonal markets kick in. We have the Tuesday night market in Sonoma joining the Friday. There's a new Glen Ellen market. Oakmont just kicked off its Tuesday night market for the first time. There's the Santa Rosa Wednesday night sort of street fair, which includes a farmers market. There is a very popular farmers market that is now celebrating its 10th year in Occidental, and that is one of my favorite farmers markets. After my home market, which is Sebastopol, and the year-round one, Occidental is just really great, and I'll tell you why in a second. And then Petaluma adds a second market on Wednesday nights. Hillsburg has their Saturday market, which starts in May, and then its Tuesday afternoon market gets started in June. There's the Cotati Market that starts the beginning of June, the Roanoke Park Market that starts the beginning of June, there's a Cloverdale Market, and I think it starts in June. It could start in mid-May. I'm not sure. I heard fairly recently that a new Kenwood Market was going to start up, and I still have not had a chance to look into that. And then we did have sort of a neighbor's farmer's market at Coppola in Geyserville. That's not happening this year because they're getting their sea legs with the new facility. But there may be a small Geyserville market somewhere that I also have to look into. That's just in Sonoma County.
That's pretty impressive. A culture of farmers markets.
A culture of farmers markets. And it's the same. It has traditionally, the last 10 years or so, been the same in Marin County, where there's the year-round market on both Thursdays and Sundays at the Marin Civic Center. But then there's seasonal markets in downtown San Rafael, in either San Rafael or Ross. It's at the Marin Art and Garden Center right there, and I'm not sure what town you're actually in at that moment. I think it's San Anselmo. There's a farmer's market in the shopping center. I think it's the shopping center in Larkspur. There was, for a while, a really sweet little farmer's market in the very tiny little town of San Geronimo. I think there's a farmer's market in Fairfax, and there's a fabulous farmer's market out at Point Reyes. And one thing I find is that, for the most part, the further that you get away from a city center, the further you get to a community that is somewhat isolated, the more unique characteristics that market has. If you go to the one that's out in Point Reyes, even though Point Reyes does get a lot of tourists, that is such a local market. Nearly every vendor there is from within about 5 miles of Point Reyes, and they have fabulous produce. They also have prepared foods like jams and that sort of thing, things that people make from, you know, their own harvest that you don't see anywhere else.
Yeah, well, the bigger the city, the less you need the kind of cultural aspect of a farmer's market to help you out. In small towns where there's not as much urban sort of activity mm-hmm. going on, the farmer's market becomes like the event, the community party.
Yeah.
Like in San Francisco, they have, I think they have a farmer's market and civic center, but who even knows that? You don't know that.
Civic center, United Nations center, Divisadero, Alamany, Ferry Building. There's a lot, but yeah, what in smaller towns like you're talking about, they're really replacing the commons, the town square. That's where you go to see your friends when those markets aren't happening. For say from December through March, in the case of Sebastopol, you miss your friends. They've really become the community gathering places. Now, do you shop at farmers markets?
Yeah, I was going when I lived in Sebastopol. I was going to the Sebastopol one.
That's right. I'd run into you there.
Yeah, and I'm going to the one now on Saturdays in Santa Rosa pretty regularly. Mm-hmm. But I did not see you yesterday.
I was a hermit this weekend. Mm-hmm. I had an extraordinarily difficult week. I mean, beyond endurance, practically. And I was getting ready to go to the farmer's market yesterday, and I thought, you know what? I'm taking this weekend off from leaving my house. I'm not going anywhere. And I just stayed. And, you know, I'm a Cancer and I'm an introvert. So I just stayed and burrowed in and did home things. And I missed my markets.
One of the things I'm starting to notice is that as I've been working on this show for a few months, like every fifth booth at the Santa Rosa Farmers Market, like I've seen the person in this studio.
In this studio, yes.
I'm like, oh, yeah, that person was good on the radio. I remember that guy. Yeah, he was funny. Yeah. She was a few weeks ago. So it's kind of like, hey.
Well, if truth be told, the reason that I am my own guest is because I did not go to the farmer's market this weekend and pull someone in. I think people should give themselves permission to be reclusive when they need to. You know, if you're an extrovert, it doesn't matter, because if you're a true extrovert, that means you recharge yourself around other people. But if you're a true introvert, as I am, you know, sometimes you just need to be by yourself to recharge yourself. And so you give yourself permission to do that every now and then. If you have something you want to say about your farmer's market, you can post your question on Mouthful's Facebook page. All you do is go to Facebook and type in Mouthful. If you put Mouthful comma, it should pop right up. And if it doesn't, put the. There's a few things on Mouthful, but we're listed as Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. So you can post a question or a comment there, and I'll read it. Or you can give us a call at 588-0637. I think we should probably, in just a minute, take another little musical break here. We're going to be talking about, we'll probably talk a little bit more about farmers markets. I have some tips on just some strategies on making your experience good. We'll also be talking about making your dog food at home. And we're going to be talking about found pleasures when it comes to food. It was the topic of my column this last Wednesday in the Press Democrat. And it's a subject I really love. And I'm curious what Eric may have to say about it. Why don't we hear track number 19? And I know it's not a father's song, but, you know, there would be no fathers without mothers.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind but Mama tried. The one and only rebel child from a family meek and mild, my Mama seemed to know what lay in store. Despite all my Sunday learning, towards the bad I kept on turning, till Mama couldn't hold me anymore. I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried. Mama tried, Mama tried to raise me better, but her pleading I denied. That leaves only me to blame, 'cause Mama tried. Dear old daddy, rest his soul, left my mom a heavy load. She tried so very hard to fill his shoes. Working hours without rest, wanted me to have the best, She tried to raise me right, but I refused. And I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried. Mama tried, Mama tried to raise me better, but her pleading I denied. That leaves only me to blame, 'cause Mama tried.
Well, yeah, Merle Haggard definitely did one of the best Mama songs ever, but that was supposed to be Mama's Fried Potatoes by Reverend Peyton's Big Damn Band, but I don't know what happened. Anyway, it's Mouthful. It's Michelle. We're talking a little bit right now about farmers markets. And a couple of things. I'm now writing a column called Fresh From Our Farmers that begins as a blog at Eat This Now. It's a weekly or twice weekly blog entry at PressDemocrat.com. And to find it, all you need to do is go to blogs and scroll down. I'm the second one listed. And every Monday, and probably coming up soon also every Thursday, there'll be an entry, and it will be a very specific seasonal snapshot of what is going on at a particular farmer's market. Last Monday, it was my first visit this season to the Occidental Farmer's Market, and I really love that market. Partly I love it because it is absolutely surrounded by trees. It starts about 4:30 in the afternoon, so by that time, even on a hot day, it's in a little valley, so the sun is starting to sink down behind the trees, and there's shade. But because Occidental is somewhat isolated, the whole town comes out, and you also have vendors there who don't go anywhere else or maybe go to one other location. So it's very much a market that is a mirror of its community. The one before that was what it's like in Sebastopol in the rain. And also I wrote recently about Savor Day at Santa Rosa Farmers Market, which takes place on the second Saturday of every month. And it's a day when the Sonoma Alliance for Veggie Outreach Revolution takes place with CalFresh is represented. That's the new food stamp program. There's cooking demonstrations, and some of them by working doctors, working pediatricians, and there's a bunch of medical professionals on hand to chat with you about the absolutely essential link between food and health. A lot of people still haven't made that connection, which I find astonishing. Food. How can food not affect every aspect of our being, just as anything else we put in our bodies does? Anyway, how do you best use your farmer's market? Some people who are just forming the habit, just starting to go to farmer's markets, go with a list. You think about what you want for dinner, you write things down, and you go to the farmer's market, and you look for those things, and that's the absolute worst way to take the best advantage of a market. Once you've been going for a while, you just naturally understand this, but the best thing you could do is throw away your list. One of the things you have to do to make that realistic thing to do is have a well-stocked pantry. That just means, that's not a big deal. It just means having things that you know that you're going to use regularly. Olive oil, good vinegars, salt, pepper, the spices that you particularly like. I also think it's a really good idea to have homemade stocks. Whatever, if you're a vegetarian, vegetables, vegetarian stocks. If you're not, chicken stock, beef stock, whatever stock is particularly good at that season. So you have those things in your freezer. You have your pantry is filled with the things that you need to put together a meal. And then you go to the market without a list and you let the market talk to you. It's like, oh, there's zucchini now and the first corn is in and look, there's still cherries. And you let the seasons talk, and after a while, you just physically begin to know what's going to be there, and you begin to anticipate it, and you don't even need to think about what you want for dinner because it's just all right there in front of you. One of the things that's happened that I think is a really great development in farmers markets, and it's really been, well, really gained momentum the last 2 years, and that's the availability of the best protein really that you can buy is now at farmers markets, whether it's dried beans and legumes, which you can find at most markets. And getting beans, shell beans at a farmer's market, they're just so much better than those you buy at off a shelf in a regular supermarket. But also any type of animal protein, whether it's fish or animal protein, whether it's seafood, chicken, duck, even I think I've even seen quail recently, eggs, everything from, say, quail's eggs, chicken eggs, duck, turkey, and goose eggs. Seeing goose eggs at the Sebastopol Farmers Market. And then a lot of grass-fed meats are now available primarily at farmers markets. And most of those farms also welcome you at the farm, not all of them, but most will. Some will actually deliver to your house if you call them. Some of the ranchers are operating CSAs, subscriptions as well. But nearly all are selling at farmers markets now. And what this means is you can go to a grocery store, instead of going to a grocery store once a week, like I did for a long time, you can go once every 3 weeks, sometimes once every 4 weeks if you use your farmers markets to their best advantage. And so, number one, give up the list. Let the markets talk to you. Another thing that's really important now that the hot weather is here is have a cooler or a thermal bag. Thermal bags are really inexpensive. But if you want to linger at the market, especially if you want to do your shopping, which I like to do your shopping, take it back to your car, and then hang out. There's prepared food. You can sit down and have a really great taco, breakfast from Mateo, really, really good paella. We had a paella maker on Mouthful last week. So you need in this weather to have things in your car to take care of the produce that you've purchased. So a cooler or thermal bag is a really good idea. If you like to buy flowers, or if you love, say, basil or parsley, you want to take a wide bucket with a low center of gravity so it doesn't tip over, with some water, and then you can just put your basil in and put your flowers in, and they'll stay fine for a couple of hours. Those things are really helpful, and you won't get home and think, oh gosh, I just bought this beautiful basil and now it's all wilted, or I brought these clams and they've been sitting in a car for 2 hours. That's not a good idea. If you live close enough that you can take a bicycle to the market, which is always a great thing, you can fit some of those things into a backpack as well. You can even put a cute little basket with a flower on the front of your bike and put your bucket of water there for your flowers, and you'll look absolutely wonderful on your way back home. You took a note while I was talking about this. What were you going to say, Eric?
I've got three questions here in the hopper for you.
Okay.
So when you're ready.
Sure. Shoot.
Okay. So some of these questions might reveal my lack of agricultural background, but all right, no disclaimers.
It may reveal mine, too.
cherries, super early in the season, relatively, in Sonoma County. And I don't remember this in Humboldt County in early in the summer having all these cherries, but there are so many cherries. So what is the story on that? Why do cherries come so early in the season?
Cherry season is May 1st. That's when we start to see the first cherries, unless that typical. And even though it was a cooler year, they were just about on time this year, the beginning of May. Now, up in Humboldt, and we have some local cherries here, not a lot, and they're about, I'd say this year they were about 3 weeks later than the others, but we're getting them from a little bit further inland, from the, let's see, let me get this right, northwest Central Valley, northwest of Sacramento, that area, cherry producers come down. We do not have a huge cherry crop in Sonoma County. I don't know of any complete cherry orchard here. We have people with a couple trees, and there's supposedly, I think, six fabulous trees on Fulton Road that are currently not being harvested. But for the most part, we see them coming in about the second or third week in May, and cherries that are coming in from a little bit further east, they're just about wrapping up now. We're going to see them for just another week or so.
Can we get the GPS coordinates on those cherry trees on Fulton so I can go raid them?
I know the house. We can talk off the air. There's some thought it could be negotiable for somebody to come in and pick them.
Okay, so that was my first one. Number two, surprisingly, as a vegetarian, I don't know how to do anything with portobello mushrooms. The only thing I've seen one time my friend came over and fried them, and I'm trying to minimize my amount of fried food. So what can I do with portobello mushrooms that doesn't involve frying?
How about sautéing? Does that count as frying?
Well, that's what I'm saying.
No, I'm just wondering. Just like, okay, yes. She sautéed. Okay. Well, some people divide those into two different things. Well, one thing you can do, and it's a very popular thing to do, is grill them. Or mimic grilling them by putting them into a hot oven until they're tender. And that, you know, so you can put them on a grill hole, or you can slice them about a little bit more than a quarter of an inch thick, but not so much as half an inch thick. Brush them with a little olive oil and vinegar and grill them as slices. You can build a nice sandwich out of them that way. You can drape them, no matter whether they've been on a grill or in the oven cooked. Basically, you just want to get them until they're tender, not only because they taste better that way, but it also makes their nutrition available. Portobellos, any of the agaricus mushrooms, you shouldn't eat raw. They have something that chemically resembles rocket fuel. And plus, their protein isn't available to humans until they're cooked. So you can then drape them, if you eat grains, drape them over farro. It is so good. And you can do, I have a preference to lemony vinaigrettes, but you can just cook some farro.
What is farro?
Okay, farro is a grain. It's in the wheat family. It's a grain. It's very nutty flavored. It's probably my favorite grain right now. It's chewy. It has a real pleasing depth of flavor. And it takes on, it will accept a variety of flavors that are absolutely delicious. It's equally good. A lot of restaurants, you see it, especially in the winter, where maybe you have braised short ribs and a really rich sauce. But I prefer it. In fact, just last year when my daughter got married on June 12th, we had big bowls of farro with diced cucumber, minced Italian parsley, feta cheese, and a lemon vinaigrette. And you can do something like that and then drape either baked or grilled portobello mushrooms on top of it, and you have a fabulous meal.
So it resembles somewhat couscous quinoa?
No.
Quinoa?
No. No, quinoa is a whole different family. Couscous doesn't grow. You know, couscous is made. Farro grows. It's in its natural state. It's probably the most familiar thing to you would probably be barley, if you're familiar with barley, but it's much darker. Mm-hmm. It's got a darker, nuttier flavor, and it doesn't get quite as creamy as barley does when you cook it. But if you're a vegetarian, and you digest grains well, it's a great thing to know about.
Okay, now I'm going to move on to question number three. Now okay. I'm going to appeal to the social critic / moral philosopher in you. So,
okay.
Bum, bum, bum. Last fall, when I moved to Sonoma County, one of the first things I noticed, because it was already September, right, is the mass number of Gravenstein apples that are rotting on the ground in West County. So I must confess, instead of going to markets and buying apples, I would go onto private property and just start scooping up apples that were on the ground, that were obviously not going to be picked, that were not going to be sold, that were going to turn into earth, and I'd bring them home by the a lot.
Bushelful?
Yeah. I mean, and I like to eat fruit. Mm-hmm. I'm on my bike all the time. I need sugar, mm-hmm. and fruit is my source of sugar. So, I mean, I was taking Gravenstein apples all over West County. What do you think about that?
I think that's a great thing.
Okay. There you go. I have your certificate.
You have okay. my absolute blessing doing that. And are you familiar with the European tradition of gleaning?
No.
Okay. To some degree, to a very large degree, it fits within that tradition. And if you're interested in gleaning, and I will post this on Mouthful's Facebook page, the movie, the English translation of which is The Gleaners and I, is a fabulous movie about the tradition of gleaning. And if you look at paintings, European paintings that go back centuries, there are paintings of gleaners, and they go into the fields. After the commercial harvest has passed through, they collect wheat, they collect potatoes. I don't know about all of Europe, but I know in France, when corporations tried to prohibit gleaning, it was ruled that gleaning is the right of the people.
Ooh.
And in France, they also, and it was, oh, what's her name, Varda, the French Nouvelle Vague filmmaker. I think it's, I will look up the movie right now. I will, Varda, Gleaners. We'll see what we get, and I'm spelling things wrong, but the Gleaners and I, here we go. Agnes, yes, Agnes Varda, and she takes the concept of gleaning and uses it as a metaphor for reusing all kinds of things and gleaning furniture that people put out into the street and aging. It's a very, very beautiful movie. But as far as I'm concerned, we should be practicing that here. You're doing a good thing for the apples. And there has been, in fact, I should see if they're still doing it. In fact, if the women, I think in Guerneville, somewhere in the river area, who were doing the free fruit, and you were on Mouthful a few years ago, if you're still doing that, will you please somehow get in touch with me and let me know that you are? They were taking, it began as an art project, they would take gleaned fruit and make piles of it. It was Frutas Gravas was the name of the program, and they would just put signs, Frutas Gravas, and they had vegetable dyes, and they would rubber stamp things, Frutas Gravas, and then they would see what would happen to it. And there were you still see people doing that. They have a whole bunch of pears, and they're going to fall off the tree. They'll pick the pears, and they'll put them outside, and they're there for people to take. So take the apples.
I just think it's a matter of time before some guy comes out and fires shots in the air from his shotgun as he's screaming at me, you know, hey, hippie, get off my property. You know what I'm saying?
That's a risk. Absolutely. That's a risk. If you're concerned about that and you see a house, knock on the door and say, I see that you have apples on the ground. How would you feel? Now, the worst thing you're going to get is get off my property. You'll sue me if anything happens to you. That's one of the concepts. But some people will be grateful. Some people will be grateful. I think it's a good thing, and it's part of a larger movement. For a while, there were people who were gleaning apples, pressing them, and making apple juice to raise money for the either Sebastopol or Greaton schools. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it has become we've done entire shows on this topic, but it has become at times more expensive to harvest the apples than they can get in the market for them. And so a lot of people do let them go.
Well, the one friend I have that has tons of apple trees on her property, mm-hmm. that she bought the property with the apple trees on it, she said her first year, being all naive, she was all gung-ho to collect the apples, mm-hmm. and ended up, her labor time was like, you know, 75 cents an hour or something like that, when she actually sold all these, you know, she was killing herself.
She was lucky.
Yeah.
If she made 75 cents an hour.
Or maybe even less, I don't remember, but she told me, it's like, yeah. No, there's no way I'm ever doing that. I'll break my back and make no money for it.
But there are people that she can contact. There are at least two people in West County who will come and, number one, take care of your trees for you, take your harvest, sell it, and then if there's any money left over, they split it with you. But it means that all of your apples are being used.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So there's two. The Duttons do that, and Nana May Organics does that. They take care of a number of them. So, in fact, I have friends who bought a 15-acre apple ranch about a mile from my house, and that's what they do. They have the Duttons managing it. It doesn't cost them anything. Except the cost of the land, and then every now and then they get $100 back at the end of the year, end of the apple harvest. But they've preserved their trees.
Nice.
Yeah. So I think we should take one more quick little musical break. Why don't we do number two, another daddy song, and we'll be right back with the final segment of Mouthful this evening.
They call me Daddy, Daddy Rolling Stone. They call me Daddy, Daddy Rolling Stone. Girls, you think you had loving. Girls, you think you had your fun. Well, girls, you ain't had nothing until I
'cause I'm a daddy. They call me Daddy Rolling Stone. 'Cause I'm a daddy roller. I'm a daddy rolling stone. Now, girls, they call my friend Big John. 'Cause he's big as he can be. Now, Big John may be twice my size, but he don't know much as me. Drinking rye. I ain't known in the city, but you hear me by and by. I'm a daddy. They call me Daddy Rolling Stone. I'm a daddy roller. I'm a daddy rolling stone.
It's Michelle here on Mouthful, along with Eric Black, Mouthful's engineer and question dude tonight. Those are great questions, Eric. Thank you. We also have heard from Mary Kelly. She's the manager of the Healdsburg Farmers Market. She has a great tale about her dad. He was a farmer in Imperial Valley, which happens to be a place that grows a lot of the country's carrots. I think they are considered the carrot capital of America. But he grew cotton and wheat and alfalfa, but he would also bring home cases of vegetables from neighboring farms. But then the six of us would work in the fields, Mary says, near Brawley, and he would bring the best homemade burritos. He would fill them with what she says today we would call veggie stir fry. And she says that her favorite part of the Healdsburg Farmers Market is seeing the fathers from her dad's generation. And he also loved Julie Child, thanks to the PBS station in San Diego. So, Mary Kelly, thanks very much. You have just enough time to slip in a remembrance. And remember, the Mouthful Facebook page is there to see anytime at all. So if you'd like to share something but not necessarily have it on the show, you can do that anytime at all. And while you're at it, you can like Mouthful. We're up to 397 likes, almost to 400. So there you go. I had said that I was going to talk about a couple of other topics tonight, including found morsels of food, which is one of my favorite topics. I wrote about it this week. And by found morsels, it's like those moments that you could not possibly go to a restaurant, for example, to duplicate. See how strong Joey's bark is from his raw diet? But things like that bit of crispy duck skin, I mean, turkey skin or chicken skin when a roast bird comes out of the oven, the crunchy heart of the first perfect watermelon of the season, that sort of thing. And if you have things like that and you feel like sharing, it's a really fun thread on Eat This Now. It's called, it starts with chicken skin. I think it's chicken skin and bone marrow, perhaps. But anyway, weigh in. Tell us what it is you really like. For some people, it's, you know, the crusty part of macaroni and cheese. One person mentioned it was the very last bite of an ice cream cone. I'm not much of a sweets person, but I really love that part. If you have a butterscotch sundae and all you have is ice cream and butterscotch syrup, I love where the butterscotch syrup and the ice cream touch, and the butterscotch has just started to get really cold. I love that. I also promised that we were going to talk about making dog food at home, which I have been doing. And I think what I'm going to do instead is do a whole show on making dog food and cat food at home. There's been a real movement towards raw diets for our animals. And Joey has been on a raw diet for 4 weeks now. He's eating only poultry and meat. Organic grass-fed from Sonoma County, and also some organic vegetables and a little bit of seaweed that I've gathered myself. And he's absolutely thriving. It's easy for me to do it because he's little. He's only 13 pounds. I think if I had a 60 to 70-pound dog, I'm not sure what I would, you know, I might be overwhelmed doing it myself. But for a little guy, it's working out really well. And on that note, this hour flew by. We are out of time. Be sure to tune in next week. I believe that we are going to be talking about what I think is the 56th or 57th annual Teriyaki Sunday, coming up on July 10th at the Buddhist Temple in Santa Rosa, a great Bay Area tradition. I figure it's about time I ask some people to come and talk about the long tradition of this great community event. See you next week. Take care of yourself, take care of each other, and think good thoughts about your dad.
Mouthful is produced by Michelle Anna Jordan. It's engineered by Lawrence Alberti and Eric Black. For more information about Mouthful, email to catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk@sonic.net. You can also go to krcb.org and download podcasts of Mouthful, as well as from iTunes.
And the moral of this story, well, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough, even he'll get hungry too. And he'll sing,
to the Lord let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go eat. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says.
To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner now, let's go eat. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says.
We got some beans and good cornbread.
Listen to what the preacher says.
To the Lord, praises be.
Praises be.